Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Come in. It's like we haven't done this at all this week or weekend.
Oh, man, dude. I'm really, really glad that we're doing an E3 roundup. I think there's lots of really cool stuff to talk about, but holy hell, I am press conferenced out.
Well, the thing is, it's weird. I was thinking about it earlier where I think doing the press conference is the gut reaction, and then doing this wrap-up is the, okay, what did we really think about that cool trailer, and are we actually hitting that pre-order button and or adding it to our list, talking to our friends about what console or what platform they're going to get it on? So I think there is a necessity to doing the hot takes, and then also a necessity to doing the actual thought process, because there was a lot of flashy stuff that we saw that may have got us excited but may not actually warrant that excitement because it's 2-3 years away.
We saw a lot of 2018 things from I think everybody, maybe with the exception of Bethesda generally just gave us 2017 things, I think. Yeah. But a lot of the big things that looked the most exciting to us, I think, are coming, if it's not DLC, are coming 2018. So, but still lots of things to be excited about. I think we're going to jump right into this. So we're not going to cover every single thing that our top five companies announced. So we're going to talk about Microsoft, Bethesda, Ubisoft, Sony, and Nintendo, which are the five press conferences that we covered. So we're going to touch a little bit on the things that kind of are interesting to us and exciting to us out of these press conferences. But there is so, so, so much more to talk about and that was announced and everything else. So if you guys are interested, then please do go find some sort of kind of overarching summary of all the things talked about by everybody. There are summaries all over the internet. We found an awesome forum post that actually listed all of the things talked about by all of the companies. Wow. So, check that out. There's going to be a link in our show notes. And if there is something that you guys want to talk to us about that we don't cover in this episode today, please do go over to our Discord. It's bit.ly/TGI Discord, all lowercase. Make sure you join the conversation over there. We've got lots of people talking about lots of different things because we saw an entire, like, the full gamut of games at this E3. It was pretty crazy. I think the only thing that we didn't see was, like, a new MOBA. We had first-person shooters, we had RPGs, we had platformers, we had, you know, like, even, we're going to talk about it later on in the Nintendo section, but we had, like, a tactical strategy game shown. We had kind of a little bit of everything this year, so it's just crazy. So let's jump right in here. We're gonna talk about Microsoft first. I think the single biggest announcement of Microsoft is just the fact that their Project Scorpio is coming out. It is the Xbox One X, which is, I don't know. I'm not sold on the name. We've been calling it the Triple X, and basically it's super powerful. It'll play 4K video. If you happen to have a TV, they can actually take advantage of that. That's great. But it is going to cost you $500. So it comes with a very hefty price tag. And the majority, if not all, of the games shown by Microsoft at E3 actually are playable on the Xbox One. So Xbox One, Xbox One S, and Xbox One S. And you see now where I'm starting to run into the problems with their freaking naming convention. It's hard to say them all in one row. But the Xbox One will, and the Xbox One, I think they called it the Xbox One Family.
They did,
was how they referred to it. So their games will play on the Xbox One Family and then also on Windows 10. So if you have a PC that is strong enough to play a lot of these games, then you don't have to worry about getting an Xbox One X. Same thing goes if you already own an Xbox One. They also announced a price drop of, I believe, $50 on the Xbox One S, but they had no indication of whether that was a temporary or a permanent drop in price. So if you've never purchased an Xbox One and you are kind of comfortable not getting the full powerful 4K one, then the Xbox One S is now a little bit cheaper. So yeah. There's kind of like three different stages of entry points into the Xbox One family now, with the Xbox One X being the new shiny.
Yeah, I think it's there's an interesting quote out there from Phil Spencer who's saying that the Xbox One X doesn't have a direct competitor right now. When you look at the PS4 Pro, it is a competitor to the Xbox One S, not the Xbox One X. Now, that might just be marketing speak. That might just be Phil trying to defend their reasoning for developing their type of pro console. But I kind of agree with that in the sense that the PS4 Pro is an incremental upgrade, and the Xbox One X is a completely new console that happens to support the Xbox One platform, mm-hmm. And I think
it's kind of like a 0.5,
yeah,
you know, when exactly. It comes to a console generation. Like, it's not I wouldn't call it necessarily full-on like next generation console. It's still in the same generation, I would say, as the Xbox One.
Yeah, but I think people could argue that in a world where consoles are replaced every 5 years, you could certainly see the Xbox One X being close to, a successor to the Xbox
yes.
One. But I think they pared it back a little bit. They made it so it was compatible with Xbox One. And thanks to the announcement of Xbox backwards compatibility, you can play your Xbox 360 and Xbox One games on your Xbox One X. So there you go. The Xbox family really is where it's at. And the thing is, I'm excited that they're building this console because I think it's something that helps the video game industry as a whole, because it continues to force their competitors to kind of keep on top of tech, and also helps PC games as well, because as much as PC gamers don't like to admit this, a majority of games they get on their platform are console games that are ported to the PC. And I believe that if you keep pushing the gambit on the consoles, you do keep the PC games to a level where PC gamers are happy with them. That's not to say that there aren't companies out there developing solely for the PC, like Blizzard and I don't know, Valve. I'm trying to think of other companies that solely focus on PC and build for PC. Mm-hmm. But I think if you keep the console generation running smoothly, that helps PC gamers get quality ports, quality looking games, and these pro versions of consoles are only serving to help PC gamers, because now developers have to hit a higher mark, and then that higher mark can translate to the PC. And I think that's really good for those folks that are, you know, complaining about shitty console ports and stuff like that. This is only going to help those folks. I mean, that being said, who are the people that are going to go out and buy a new $500 console? You would be surprised. There's probably a lot that are willing to trade in their console for a couple $100 and then bump themselves up to that next console, especially with 4K televisions coming down. I think we're heading into, like, right now is not the perfect time, but we're heading into the perfect time to invest in 4K. We're getting there. 1080p is on its way out, I think.
I find it so interesting, because I mean, my big worry with 4K was that it was going to be like the 720 of its generation, that, you know, we were going to kind of skip it and go whatever the next thing, I guess, is 8K the next thing, or
yeah, it would be 8K. Now, like, 8K is something that people are experimenting with, and there is content out there, but I don't think, now I could be wrong, and there are probably people who listen to this show that know way more than I do about this stuff.
Yeah, this is going into the tech side more than the gaming side. Yeah, this is where I get a little fuzzy as
exactly. well. Exactly. But my assumption is that with 8K, if you move too quickly and storage capacities don't keep up and don't become cheaper, then you end up going from, if you skip right to 8K, you're spending $50 on a movie. Mm. You're spending about $100 on a video game. Now, that's not unheard of here, but
yeah, but
or in other countries. But that being said, like, with the more space required on a disc, the more expensive they are to produce. And I think if you wait for technology to catch up, then you hit a point where there is no increase in cost. That's just how they make Blu-rays now. That's how mm-hmm. they make the dual layer stuff. And again, I really don't know exactly what I'm talking about, but this is like an educated guess, I guess I would say. But I'm in the market for a 4K television eventually. I'm not in any rush because I don't have anything that would technically support it. Mm-hmm. But the 4K televisions do bump up the way your 1080p consoles look. So there is a benefit. But again, like if you already have a large...
That's a lot of money for...
Yeah.
Who knows how much of an actually like noticeable difference you're going to get if you have the same TV mm-hmm. hooked up to a 4K box versus a 1080 box.
I think
I don't know if it would be noticeable for me, the consumer.
Yeah.
Like I feel very average. Like I feel like I don't I probably wouldn't notice. I'm not like, well, and the thing that keeps popping into my head is like people who are like full on audio snobs. Mm. And I know obviously audio and visual. Audio and video are totally different beasts, but at the same time, I feel like there are people who would 100% instantly notice the difference between, you know, a 1080p console and a 4K console, both playing on a 1080 TV. I don't think that I'm one of those people.
Yeah, no. Now, I will say, I've seen a PS4 played on a 4K television, and there is a difference in quality for the better, but it has to come down to value. Like if you're in the market for a TV and you're going to buy a TV.
Well, but that's the thing. Like what I'm talking about is keeping the same TV and having a different box feeding it a picture versus like, obviously, yes, if you have a 4K TV, that's going to look better. But I'm talking about if you don't upgrade your TV, leave that alone. Mm-hmm. They're saying the Xbox One X will give you a better picture. And I'm saying if my TV stays the same, I don't think I'm going to notice that air quotes better picture.
You're not going to get it. Well, the only way you're getting a better picture is if the game looks different. And in mm-hmm. some of these cases, the Xbox One X is spitting out a better looking game. So the mm-hmm. TV isn't necessarily contributing to that. It's the fact that the console is able to produce better performance.
Textures.
And we've seen that already in some of the PS4 Pro games coming out where a game, and you've seen the opposite where they do a shitty patch job and then that game comes out and it's actually running worse on the PS4 Pro, and they're and you know they've tried to address that, but it's a weird time. The fact that we've spent the first 12 minutes of the show discussing 4K, it's just a weird wild west. Nobody really knows what the best solution is, and the fact that people are experimenting with these expensive investments is what's going to shape the way this console generation works. And then you have Nintendo sitting on the sidelines and like, you guys fight over 4K. Like they've made some weird battles. Like they didn't bet on HD and it completely bit them in the butt. But when it comes to 4K, they are wisely sitting this one out. Cause I think they're better focusing on this Switch handheld to TV mode and not even worrying about 4K. So
about resolutions.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Oh, they're definitely not worried about resolutions.
No, they're really, really not. They don't even hit 1080 most of the time.
Yeah, well, yeah, they, and man, it's funny how Reddit goes, like, just all the conversations of, you know, how it runs in dock mode, how it runs in handheld mode. Like, is it 720p? Is it 900? Is it 1080? And, personally, I don't even pay attention to that. I just enjoy the game. And I think that's why I'm kind of you know what? The Xbox One X sounds cool, but it's not in my realm right now because I have an Xbox that plays Xbox One games, so I don't really need to worry about buying a new Xbox.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure somebody will worry about buying a new Xbox, and if you are one of the people who would like to buy a new Xbox, please write in, let us know how it goes. Sea of Thieves. So this one I'm actually really excited about. We saw some influencers play it at E3 last year. I don't think that it wasn't actually live. It was like pre-recorded, their first hands-on experience with this. And I swear this E3 was like year of the pirate. There were so many cool pirate games shown, Sea of Thieves being one of them.
There were two, and right?
I feel like there was more than that. I feel like there were a few little indie things too.
This is like the zombie conversation. It's like, man, there's so many zombie games. Like they showed two. They didn't even show the one we were looking for. But I only remember the
thing
one.
With zombie games is that we've had so many. I feel like the amount of people making zombie games is going like this, and then the amount of people making pirate games is going like this. So I think that we're kind of on the upswing for pirates and the downswing for zombies, which is good because I'm a pirate lover, not a zombie lover. So I'm excited, but Sea of Thieves is the kind of like super cartoony looking pirates versus the one we'll talk about in a few minutes from Ubisoft called Skull and Bones is a little bit more of a realistic looking pirates. But Sea of Thieves is kind of cartoony and fun. You've got there is PvP, so you can play like your crew against other crews. But you kind of go around and solve puzzles and beat enemies. And we saw some really cool gameplay. Are you excited about Sea of Thieves? Because I know I went and signed up for the like insider early access beta, whatever.
I'm a big fan of Rare. And I'm also a big fan of the games they make. So Sea of Thieves is obviously on my radar, but we talked about it on the press conference, and I'm a fan of what Rare does, but I'm not a fan of these make your own story style games. And Sea of Thieves looks like fun, and if we have a bunch of people playing, I think that I will jump in. And certainly the fact that it is a Play Anywhere title, if you buy it on PC or you buy it on or both digital stores for either PC or Xbox, you're going to get it across both platforms. That's certainly appealing because I do like my couch play, but I also like playing with my friends who only seem to buy multiplayer games on PC for some reason. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Sea of Thieves looks like a lot of fun, and they make it look like a lot of fun in these videos, and it looks like there is lots to do in the world, and there are objectives that encourage you to play with your friends and not just have to have your own fun. You just kind of follow the objective marker. So I think they've hit a good stride there between the two.
Well, that exactly, yeah, that kind of seems like the balance, right? Because it's not full on Minecraft where there is literally nothing to do, but it's also not nothing to do, but there's no story, there's no questing, there's no nothing. It's a sandbox, it's make your own fun versus, you know, like a full RPG quest story mode, whatever. This seems to be kind of in between. It's like you explore, you poke around, you find caves, you find treasure maps, like the game guides you with a very light hand, enough to give you things to do and give you objectives and things to focus on, but not enough that it kind of ruins that exploration sandbox feel. So I'm going to give it a shot anyways, but I'm definitely, I think, more excited about the Skull and Bones Ubisoft offering when it comes to pirate games. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. We also saw from Microsoft Middle Earth Shadow of War, which looks really cool. I know I played the... I'm totally blanking on the name of it now, but I played the previous... Shadow of Mordor. That's it, Shadow of Mordor. Mm-hmm. I did play that one, and I really enjoyed it. And this looks really cool. There was, like, battling against enemies to, like, turn them onto your side. And, yeah, that whole mechanic looks really cool. And Ryan, are you looking forward to Shadow of War at all?
I loved Shadow of Mordor. I keep looking at the Game of the Year editions that keep going on sale on the PS4 and Xbox One, thinking that would be a fun game to replay on the television, because I loved every second of it on PC, and the fact that it combined like Batman gameplay with the world of high fantasy that Lord of the Rings is, and you know this new nemesis system that continued to just kind of delight you, like. Out of nowhere, someone would come in.
That's like, I guess not coming back, but like they're continuing that nemesis system into the new game as well.
Yeah,
so
they've really overhauled it.
New and improved. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I'm a big fan of the accents that they give the orcs, and the orcs are all really fun, and they showcase that so well in the gameplay demo that I can't wait. The only unfortunate part is that this game was supposed to come out this summer, and now it's coming out in October, which is going to be a very busy time for video games. I mean, you should see my Amazon pre-order list. It's not looking so hot for free time. So, I mean, it looks great, and it looks like it plays great, and I love the new addition of, you know, bringing, you know, orcs onto your side and having those orcs fight against other orcs, and it looks like just plain fun, and I am a huge fan of fun. And this just screams fun for me. I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. So another title that we saw at Microsoft was Life is Strange Before the Storm. So this one's coming out, I believe, in August. And this is a 3-episode prequel to Life is Strange. And so there is a slight little piece of controversy around this game. Apparently the voice of Chloe, so Chloe is the main character in this one. The actress who played Chloe previously is not in this game. And that's because there was the ACTRA, the union strike. And so they hired someone outside of the union to go in and do all of the voice work. So we're going to get a different voice actress because of the strike. I don't know, Ryan, do you have any thoughts on that? Or
so to add, are you looking... to add to this game's controversy, it's interesting because we really loved the first, I'd say, half of Life is Strange, and then it kind of felt like a chore to finish up. I still really enjoyed it, and I think a prequel is kind of the right way to go about it.
I like the 3-episode arc. Yeah. I think that's probably enough because the other one was 5 episodes, and that felt like maybe a little bit much. There were some parts that probably could have been cut.
Yeah, and this is giving us a very short, and we know the ending, obviously, because we played Life is Strange. Now, the other controversy comes that there are 3 episodes, but if you pre-order the deluxe edition, you get an extra bonus episode where you play as Max, prequel Max, that's set before the time that we see in Before the Storm. So it's a prequel prequel.
Chloe and Max, like, when they're kids?
Yeah, I think so. Like, maybe before or when she got her powers, or I don't know. It just, it's the right idea. But the good part about the whole voice actress thing is that even though Ashley Birch wasn't able to play Chloe, she actually did contribute to the character by being a consultant. So she was able to get in there and help out. She just wasn't able to record. And, you know, honestly, it's a younger Chloe, you know, maybe the ravages of drug use. I don't know. Like, she was pretty hardcore, right? Like, I'm just joking. But I think there's nothing wrong with hiring new voice actors. I haven't heard what she sounds like, though. So,
yeah, it's kind of hard to judge. And I mean, like, see, the thing is, like, there's nothing wrong with hiring a new voice actor. It's if you hire a new voice actor because other actors are on strike. So I think that's where the controversy comes in is, you know, actresses should support other actresses. But, I mean, if you're not part of the union, then you don't subscribe to the whole ideal of the union anyway. So, I mean, that's, again, that's a whole bordering on political conversation. So we're not going to have it here. But, yeah, it's definitely a tough one. So in terms of actual quality of the video game, we'll kind of hold our judgment until we actually get a chance to actually see it and play it. And, yeah, but Before the Storm, I like the idea. I like the shorter story arc. I think that it might actually be worth playing. And like you said, we know how it ends. So I'm really interested to see the relationship between Chloe and Rachel play out. I think that could be a very cool story. So that, again, like I said, the first episode comes out in August. So look for that in a couple of months. We also got to look through the Microsoft press conference at the thing that ruined Mass Effect. Yeah. And that was the big reveal of Anthem. So the very first thing that I think both of us noticed when this reveal happened is not only was like the universe really well designed, but the animations, the movements, the face, the everything was kind of what we expected out of Mass Effect Andromeda. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like Anthem took all of the resources, and it's kind of unfortunate because if they had taken the resources they put into Anthem and put them into Mass Effect Andromeda, Andromeda probably would have been way more successful because they would have, you know, had all the big major problems, animations and stuff like that, along with a little bit more direction. Like, they have a proven property. It has fans. Like, it's an IP that people can get behind. I don't know why they would. Maybe they thought that just the Mass Effect name would be enough to carry a shitty game. So they put out a shitty game with that name on it and then threw everything into their new IP. I don't know. What do you think, Ryan? What were your thoughts on seeing Anthem?
You know, I like what Destiny was throwing at us, and I played it and I enjoyed it. I'm a big fan of Bungie. And then the idea of a live game hits you, and when content isn't delivered that you enjoy, you lose interest very quickly. And Anthem is being labeled as EA's answer to Destiny, and it looked really good, But it did look very kind of shallow. Like there was, you know, a couple enemy types, a couple powers, some
mech. It is still, it's coming out late 2018, isn't it? Like it's still really far out.
They're calling spring, but I could see it getting delayed to fall 2018. But, you know, the thing is, I'm kind of burned on BioWare games because it seems every other release that they have is either really good or just mediocre. And I think that they really I lost a lot of faith in them when Mass Effect Andromeda came out. I liked Andromeda, but the fact that they just, it didn't hit the sales targets. People made fun of us. There's a bunch of GIFs making fun of us. We'll just, you know, shelve it. Close Montreal off, make them work on Battlefront 2. We're just going to move on. And I don't appreciate companies that kind of take these beloved IPs and just shove them in a freezer when they don't sell well. And I mean, we'll get to another company that is.
Well, and even then, I don't 100% think that it didn't sell well. I think it sold fairly well, compared to a lot of other properties. It maybe didn't sell well compared to, say, like Mass Effect 2 or 3, and maybe it just didn't reach their expectations. But I mean, it still, I think it sold.
Over
a million copies, I think, like day one.
And that's good.
That is good. And then it sold another, I think they're almost up to 2 million copies now. So, I mean, that's not a bad sales for like a video game that's been out for a couple of months with bad reviews. Like,
and they weren't even
good. They weren't even bad. They were lukewarm, I think.
Exactly. And I mean, not to turn, you know, and I don't want to be like a lot of other folks that are turning the announcement of Anthem into a chance to give BioWare crap for Andromeda, but I think there needs to be something said about a company that throws a game out and then just, you know, doesn't want to touch it, doesn't want to address it. Mass Effect wasn't even mentioned in the press conference for EA or Microsoft or anybody for that matter. And the fact that there's talk that, that, you know, Andromeda left some very serious story tidbits that needed to be addressed. And clearly one was earmarked for DLC. And there's talk that we're not going to get that DLC. The EA conference was a perfect opportunity to say, yes, we care about Mass Effect. We are going to be releasing new content. But they didn't even mention it. They didn't even take the time to even give it 2 minutes. And I think that's just a really crappy way to treat your fans. And those fans are ones that you're going to try to convince to buy Anthem. And I think Destiny proved that no matter what the pedigree of the studio behind it, if you don't make a great game that treats its players fairly, people aren't going to be happy with the product. And I think Destiny was one of those experiences where they released a game and it wasn't living up to expectations. And then they came back. And they revisited it and they did their best to fix it. And they did with The Taken King. So EA doesn't seem like the kind of company willing to do that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I'm excited about Anthem. I think it looks great. But I will probably be waiting to see more because I've been fooled before.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about this title. I'm not like, yay. But I mean, like, I look at it and I think, you know, basically all the things that you just said, like they threw Mass Effect under the bus for this. They totally abandoned it as a project, even though it had a whole bunch of fans and a whole bunch of story arcs that really weren't finished. They just kind of walked away from it. And again, like, this is just yet another strike against EA. And I don't know. I don't want to give them any more of my money. And I know I've said that before, but Mass Effect Andromeda, as a Mass Effect fan, you have to buy it, right? So you have to try it out. And but yeah, after seeing the way they treat the franchise, I think I'm just gonna kind of keep EA at an even longer arm's length, maybe a leg's length. I don't know.
and there, you know, this has been done before by EA, where Dragon Age 2 was not well received. It actually got a lot of fair criticism, just like Andromeda did. And they actually, you know, they released some DLC, but there was a planned expansion that was scrapped and then rolled into Inquisition. So I'm not saying that EA is probably going to drop Mass Effect and not go back to it. I'm sure all the work that's been done post Andromeda is going to be rolled into the next project. Whether they do that in, you know, a suitable amount of time, or they take their time and they wait the 5 years like they did between Dragon Age 2 and Inquisition, We won't know for quite a while, and I'm pretty sure Anthem's their focus for the foreseeable future. So I think once Anthem is out, and then once Dragon Age 4 is out, then we'll probably hear more about the next Mass Effect. So I don't expect to hear any Mass Effect news for quite a while, which is unfortunate. And I mean,
it's really unfortunate when you were expecting DLC, right? Because even if you're not expecting like the next entry into the series, you're at least expecting, you know, some of those story arcs to get closed off with DLC. So the fact that they're not even talking about that, is bad news, because I mean, there anyone who's actually finished the game is probably really looking forward to knowing what happens in those story arcs. Yeah. And they are a source of money, and EA's just like, meh. There's not enough of you for us to care, and that feels bad.
Yeah, that is unfortunate.
So the next conference that we covered was Bethesda. Bethesda didn't have quite as many announcements as we kind of were not necessarily expecting, but I know, obviously, my reasons for covering Bethesda are always Elder Scrolls, and since we just got the Morrowind expansion, we didn't really see anything else from the franchise. Other than, I mean, God, we had Skyrim news all over the place. It's getting the VR treatment, it's getting the Switch treatment, it's everywhere. And it's also going to be an expansion for their card game. So Skyrim is just prolific through everything. But in terms of an actual, you know, Elder Scrolls 6, or in terms of some sort of next expansion for ESO, obviously Morrowind just launched, so they were mostly talking about the awesome things that come with Morrowind.
Yeah, and did you see the news, actually, that Bethesda was publicly talking about Elder Scrolls 6, saying that, and this is the same news that they announced last year, was that there's two more projects that Bethesda proper is working on, and Elder Scrolls 6 won't be started until those are completed. Yeah. And we don't even know what those two other titles are, so...
So there's still two other titles, even though they announced, so this is the one of the big announcements was Wolfenstein New Colossus.
Yeah, so Bethesda proper,
that's not one of the projects though.
No, because Bethesda
there's
Bethesda as a publisher, and then there's Bethesda the main studio that does Elder Scrolls and Fallout. We don't know what they're working on. The last project they worked and shipped on was Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. So Wolfenstein 2 the New Colossus is by Machine Games, which is part of the Bethesda family,
right?
And they made the, obviously, Wolfenstein 1 and a couple of DLC packs, which was kind of a well-received reimagining or revisiting of the Wolfenstein franchise that it belonged to id way back when. So this game looks pretty pretty crazy. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on, and there's like pregnant ladies stabbing folks, and like cartoon frogs and Nazis and...
Well, yeah, Nazis is kind of like the big bad of this franchise, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it exists in a world where they won World War II. So it's like an alternate universe kind of a thing. And you are trying to lead a revolution to take back the world from the Nazis, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was like fighting Nazis. I can get on board with that.
It's a lot of fun. And honestly, if you haven't played the Wolfenstein, reimaginings by Machine Games, they're all on sale on whatever platform you're looking for. I'm pretty sure PlayStation is probably your best bet in terms of the best deal. But they have Wolfenstein, and then they have Wolfenstein The New Order, which I believe is the expansion pack. So very highly regarded, great games, a lot of fun, action, you know, great storytelling as well, which is not usually heard of in these type of run and gun shooters. So yeah, it's a no-brainer that they're developing a sequel, and it's Wolfenstein's turn to get the spotlight after we had Doom last year. So mm-hmm. I would think that next year Bethesda is probably going to be focusing on a proper title from Bethesda proper. So we'll see what that is. But for now, yeah, they were totally focused on 2017. I don't think there was a single thing announced for 2018.
No, and they've done that in the last couple of years, where they've just basically been totally focused on that like E3 cycle. So stuff coming out like late this year, early next year, like before the next E3, they haven't been doing a lot of like big, long lead out announcements saying, mm-hmm. you know, like, oh, 2 years from now, we're going to have this thing. Which I think really works in their advantage, and one of the reasons why I actually quite like the Bethesda presentations. I know that's not really the popular opinion. A lot of people say it's always a letdown, or it's boring, or whatever. But I think that Bethesda delivers a lot more on a lot of their promises, because they're only looking, you know, 12 months into the future, as opposed to some of the other companies that are looking 2 and possibly further into the future, like 2 years or further into the future. Because then, I mean, so many things can change in that amount of time, right? And they're often showing first looks and initial concepts and other stuff like that. And so we're not actually getting a whole lot of information about these properties. They're not, they don't have a lot of work done on them. Whereas the things that Bethesda shows us coming in the next 12 months, they're getting very close to ready to release. So it, you know, they deliver a lot more than some of the other companies. Like, yeah. I mean, we watched all of the press conferences. Or like the big ones. And I don't remember seeing anything else really other than there was the one scene of Mads Mikkelsen in, I think, was it the Sony presentation of, and I'm totally even forgetting what that game was called. Death Stranding. That's it. Yeah. That was like a big thing last year, right? They were just like, oh, this is the, you know, really creepy thing. There's lots of black goo. Norman Reedus's butt. Like, you know,
why not?
It was a really big thing, and then we just didn't really hear about it this year. And it's like, well, what's going on with that game? I would rather you not have told me anything last year and told me more this year when it's closer to coming out. But
yeah, well, you know, companies want to announce their products as soon as possible because these days you can calculate pre-orders the day you put it up on the market, even if you don't have your, you know, the money in hand, which is how a lot of online pre-orders work. Those numbers still help you develop and, you know, shape your product, whether you need to, you know, put less staff, more staff, stuff like that. And Bethesda, it's nice that they're focusing on 2017. And, you know, Hachikumo in the chat room saying, like, obviously they have stuff planned for 2018 or else they wouldn't have a 2018 presentation. But I like their focus on 2017 because as gamers who get very, you know, very rarely get to play things early, even though we are kind of considered press, we don't necessarily get to play these games before anybody else. It's nice to know that what we're seeing is what we're going to get in the next 6 months. And I would much rather wait 6 months or even a year as opposed to the 2 or 3 years that we're going to have to wait. Like, I don't know, Sony's biggest issue when we get to it was the fact that we were watching a lot of stuff that we had already seen. It's technically new, but it's not a new title. It's gameplay. It's trailers that are for games that we already knew existed. And we already had like the, yep, I'm getting that. And I don't need to see anything more, you know? the other thing in Bethesda was basically the Evil Within 2, which was, I don't know.
It took us a long time in that trailer to figure out what it actually was.
Yeah. And you know, it was, it looks a lot better than Evil Within in terms of its graphics and animations and stuff, because I played a bit of the Evil Within and it just was not my cup of tea. It was just, too jump scary.
It has a creepy hallway run. I'm not into that. But that was like in the first like 10 seconds of the trailer was literally like him standing in a hallway, some like floaty, ethereal looking ghosty thing at the other end. And then all of a sudden it just goes into the camera and I'm like, nope.
Yep. Not a fan. And you know, that's the thing is like, it's there for some people. And there were people that really loved the Evil Within and the director behind the game is well regarded and people will follow him as he develops new games. So it's, and this goes back to the conversation.
It looked interesting, but it's too scary, I think, for me. Too jump scary, yeah.
Exactly. And it goes back to the conversation we had about Mass Effect and that this is a company that supports their developers and their ideas and doesn't just cut and run when something doesn't quite sell as much as you would hope. And I'm not a fan of companies, you know, burning money, but I am a fan of companies that, you know, treat their IP fairly and their customers fairly. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to see the Evil Within 2.
So next thing that we saw was basically Assassin's Creed Origins. We saw all over the place this this weekend this past few days. And man, it looks so freaking cool. So we are going all the way back to the founding of the Assassin Order. And that happens in ancient Egypt. So I think it's one of the time periods that if you're doing a historical series, that's one of the big time periods in human history. It's so intriguing because they were doing so many things at that point in time. It has so many interesting themes. So I'm looking forward to it. You get to, you know, like fly around and see through the eyes of a bird. What other mechanics did we see?
There was the bird. There was... man, the bird was the one that stood out, but I guess there was some aftertouch mm-hmm. with the arrow. You could kind of guide your arrow a little
right,
bit.
Right, that was it. That was it. Yeah, you could shoot an arrow and then make it go. Which was,
you know, is just exciting. It doesn't make it a lick exciting. Of sense.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
But it's still cool.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what was that movie with the guns and they did like the like curve the bullets? Oh,
Wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it's what like it reminds that. Me of. Yeah. Curving bullets, but game, with arrows.
The game looked really good. The game, you know, there's talk that it is a very different Assassin's Creed. It's a better Assassin's Creed. And the fact that they took a year off is nice. I think Ubisoft showed really well at the show. I would even put them like above most presentations if I wasn't such a Nintendo fan. I think it would, I mean, maybe that's why it's so high up there. I might even like bump it to the top because it had a really good showing. And it's nice to be excited about Assassin's Creed again. I don't know. It's just nice to be excited about that franchise. And I love Egypt. I think the main character is a little like, I don't know, like kind of boring. Like you, anybody could have said, yeah, the rough and tumble guy over there, let's make him the main character. They didn't really do anything interesting.
They didn't even develop the character very much because I don't even remember them giving us the name of the character versus, like, if you look at Syndicate, they were, you know, this brother-sister pair. They had a whole backstory. We heard about them, like, right from the beginning. We knew who they were, and they had their own character. Whereas in this one, like, I don't even, like I said, I don't even know the name of the protagonist. So
Egyptian guy, I don't know.
Yeah. A random Egyptian guy, number 27.
And so. It was very early. They were focused on gameplay. There wasn't a lot of story being told. But you're right. Like when you look at Syndicate, they put those two characters front and center. And I think that's what made that game so great. And actually what makes most great Assassin's Creed games great, because you had Ezio, like people loved Ezio. And then you had, you know, the guy in Black Flag who was a pirate.
It's really funny. I was trying to think of his name, too, and I totally Edward? Can't remember it now. Well, I think it might have been Edward.
He was a pirate, though.
Yeah, pirate guy.
And
he was such a great character. We can't even remember his name.
Yeah, he was like a Heath Ledger-type character. And he was just really well put together. And then you had Unity, where it was, again, just a boring French man. And that game failed miserably. And I think that your character, with character-based games, your character has to be approachable, likable, like, you know, relatable. And I don't see that in this game. Now, if Assassin's Creed Origins is just a really fun playground, maybe we won't care whether the character is generic Egyptian assassin. But I would have loved to see the unique structure that they set up in Syndicate with Evie and the other guy. I don't remember his name.
The one that you didn't play, obviously.
No, I played a bunch of Syndicate, but I was more into the.
I meant like you didn't play as the dude. You played as the girl.
No, she was a lot more fun, and she she was more interesting. The other guy was just kind of a butt, you know. So.
Well, speaking of pirates, this is our next pirate game. Skull and Bones came out of Ubisoft, and it looks so cool, dude. Oh my god.
It does. It looks like Black Flag's naval combat, but overhauled to the nines. And I'm, again, not a huge fan of games just billed as multiplayer type games. And this is another one of those. It looks to be mainly multiplayer. But, you know, Ubisoft does a great job at supporting their multiplayer when it's successful. And I don't know, it's pirates. It looks like a lot of fun. Just the way the ship's debris flies all over the place. It just, I had a blast with that, with the naval combat and Black Flag. So the fact that we could like form a crew of ships and then talk strategy and like blow other ships up, that sounds great.
Yep. And to me, I think, I don't know if you ever played it, but there was a game like years and years and years ago called Sid Meier's Pirates from the same guy that does Civilization. And it was kind of like a strategy sort of game. And you basically sailed around the Caribbean and tried to, you know, build up your ship. And there was some naval battles and there was like searching for treasure and all that kind of stuff. And you tried to, you know, become like you allied yourself with like some of the countries. And then that meant you did battle with other countries. So if you like allied yourself with England, then you were enemies with Spain, and you would take over ports and all this kind of stuff, and romance like governor's daughters and things, and man, it was so good. And this game, Skull and Bones, kind of looks like it might be along those lines.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, given the 2017 treatment. So I am fully on board. Not to mention, did you see the size of that Kraken?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I completely forgot about that. Okay, that,
yes.
You know, the thing for me is that Kraken, you know, release the Kraken, all those fun memes. I think that that kind of makes the game more intriguing to me, because when you just do pirates, it's like, okay, pirates are great. And the way they're showcasing our pirates are great. But then you go like all Pirates of the Caribbean on me, and you give me a Kraken and some weird accents and some skeletons and shit. I think that's great. And you just need, I love a little supernatural in like the pirate, you know, pirates were a real thing, and you know, it looked very grounded in realism to a certain extent. And the fact that they're throwing in this supernatural, I mean, supernatural, who's to say, right? But a Kraken.
You don't know. We've only explored a fraction of the ocean, Ryan.
Yeah, and I don't plan on helping out on that. Yeah. I'm not going anywhere near an ocean, because you know what? Krakens. There's a reason we think they exist. So,
fair enough.
Is it fair enough, though?
Yeah, well,
I think I'm being reasonable.
I'll give it to you. But yeah, so Skull and Bones looks, I think that was another 2018 title. We saw a lot of 2018 things from Ubisoft, including Beyond Good and Evil 2. So Ryan, did you play the original?
I tried very hard. So Beyond Good and Evil was, I think I have it on GameCube, and then they re-released it as an HD title on...
Right, because Beyond Good and Evil is old, right? Like, we're not talking about something that came out 5 years ago.
No, it's 15 years ago this game came out. It was on the GameCube, Xbox, and PS2, and it was remastered. There was an HD re-release, I think, on Xbox One, PS, and PS4, and PC. And Beyond Good and Evil was Ubisoft's answer to the 3D Zeldas. They wanted to make that game, and it's highly... it's kind of a cult hit. Like, a lot of people love it, but not enough that it sold well enough to get a sequel until now. Beyond Good and Evil 2 was actually teased years ago at a press conference where they showed a very realistic looking, Paige and, Jade, the main characters from the original. And then it was shelved. And now we got this new game, the trailer, which was kind of delightful to watch. It was like if DreamWorks made a, like, really kind of R-rated, like there's some boobs moving around, there's some swear words, so it looks like a lot of fun. And the people make the guys behind it, like Michael Ancel and his team, very emotional on stage when they finally got to show it, which was really a nice change of pace to see. He just looked like he was very genuine and happy that they're finally getting to make this game. And we don't know anything about it, but it looks great.
The thing that we did see at least more of than I have seen in the past, although granted I didn't watch the trailer that came out before E3, but we got more details on Far Cry 5. And it was actually a really interesting kind of story lead up that they gave to the game. And they kind of explained that, you know, it's this super religious cult who has, you know, kind of militarized and taken over this small town. So you're not just in a, you know, cult town. There are also, you know, townsfolk in the same place that are kind of terrified. Like, everyone is afraid of this militarized cult. So you kind of come in at this time and you're, I guess, part of the resistance and trying to take back the town, which I think is a really cool story idea. And I mean, it was a pretty, there were some pretty violent animations and things that were shown in the trailer.
Caden actually made an appearance when this game
did, I think it was right when there was like a combine about to like mow somebody over, and I was just like, Ryan, you're gonna scar your child.
Really, he's pretty good. Like, he won't remember this.
He won't remember any of this. It's fine. No.
He's pretty good when it comes to you know, that sort of stuff. But no, you know, Far Cry 5 is well, Hachikumo's putting it best. Far Cry 5 is like a weaponized Outlast 2. Outlast 2 being a game that focused in on a Christian cult that was doing terrible, terrible things to a village. This looks like a Christian cult that has taken over a county, blocked it off, blocked all cell signal, and basically is holding people hostage and has started this regime, which is kind of like the themes of Far Cry 5. There always seems to be this crazy guy that takes over a large body of land and, you know, empowers himself and becomes a dictator. And it looks like instead of being in no-name country somewhere in South America or, you know, in the other continents, we're actually doing it here in North America. This is a, you know, Hope County based in like a Montana type area. And I would assume that's got a lot of people kind of feeling like uneasy, but it is nice to see them poking fun at some real issues, I guess. Not real issues. I shouldn't say it like that. All the other stuff was kind of, you know, based in some sort of, I don't know. You kind of look at this and it's like, it's a parody, but you could almost see like its actual, you know, roots, you know?
Yeah. You can see what it's inspired by, and clearly they're taking it to the extreme. It's what the franchise does. And I can see, like, that's why it makes people uncomfortable, is because you can see the kind of underlying themes and their basis in reality, even if they are taken to crazy extremes. But yeah, I can see why that makes people uncomfortable. But I think it's kind of nice that, you know, we're looking at these themes. We're taking on an enemy in America as opposed to going to nameless country in the Middle East or whatever. Like, it's kind of nice to recognize that there could be problems here at home as well as abroad. So I think it's going to be a really interesting entry into the franchise, and I think it looked really cool. I think it's going to be fun to play. So, but again, that's another Far Cry 5 is another 2018, right?
Yeah. Or February, I think, is what they're looking at for that one, which, you know, is there's a lot of games coming out later this year, and I'm sure some of them might get pushed into early 2018. So it's nice to see Ubisoft being kind of realistic, and they've kind of chosen February as their like Far Cry time. Primal released at that point. I believe
4. I really liked Primal.
Exactly. And I believe 4 was their last one that they kind of put out in the holiday season. So it's nice that they're giving it a little bit more time. And it looks fun, and it'll be nice to kind of, you know, shoot around in some more familiar areas as opposed to just, you know, random South American country kind of thing. So
Before we move on to Sony and Nintendo, we're going to take a moment here to thank our patrons. If you like the show, you can go to patreon.com/thegamersin and support us. We have our game night coming tomorrow night. Make sure that you have joined into our Discord, bit.ly/TGI Discord, to do that. If you are pledging at the, I believe, $2 or higher level, you get preferred access to come play with us. You also, everyone who's a patron gets to vote on what we were going to play on game night. And right now, I think it kind of looks like we're probably going to be playing some PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which I got a little bit of time in with last night. And it was stressful, yet fun, yet I'm really bad. So it should make for a good stream.
Good. Hey, that's what we're looking for, right?
Exactly. So if that sounds interesting to you guys, again, go over to patreon.com/thegamersin. We really appreciate everyone who is supporting the show. So thank you guys very much. We also have a patron ad this week from The Geek Review. It says, The Geek Review is a podcast that reviews everything and anything. For an honest consumer review, The Geek Review can be found on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Discord, and at thegeekreview.podbean.com. So the Sony conference, they had some new information, some announcements for me that made me really excited, which included Horizon getting DLC. They did talk about Horizon was going to get DLC, but we kind of saw exactly what that was going to be at the press conference. And man, I'm so excited. Like, this cannot come soon enough. Like, just Sony, take my money, take all of my money, and just give me Horizon content from now until the end of time, and I'll be happy.
There was a news story about it, and they did say Horizon's first expansion. So I have a feeling that we will get at least one more. And the fact that, you know, I saw the trailer, and it's like, oh, this looks great. It's like the snow region. And you went off about how, you know, these are the this, and they are the that, and they come from here, and we already saw them, and it's really great. And Ryan, why haven't you finished Horizon yet? I don't know. Because I'm a terrible person.
Basically, it's a snowy expansion, and we're going to see more of the Banuk people, and they were kind of like a fringe in the original Horizon game. They were a tribe that existed, but they didn't really have a whole lot of quests. It was more, they were part of the world exploration, so they had this, like, hero character who was then ostracized by the tribe for something that he did, And so he left like mementos for his son around the world. So when you would find a memento, then you would get some more of his story. So it was one of the collectibles, and it was like the story behind all of the collectibles. I believe there were either 9 or 12. I can't remember. All together. And it was a really, really sad story, but you basically had to do these like big, hard to figure out climbing puzzles almost. And you knew there was a puzzle there because like the cliffs would be painted with these gigantic like symbols in these like chalky looking paints. And it was just so cool. So you knew there was a puzzle, but sometimes it was really hard to execute, really hard to figure out. And after climbing all the way up to the big top of the mountain, then you would find one of these figurines. So I really liked the Banook. I liked their armor. I liked their story. They were part of the main story, but it was like one very small quest hub that you had to do. So I'm excited that they're exploring more of that. And I also think it's really cool that they seem to be exploring part of the game that they didn't before. And they're not just, at least from what I could tell from the trailer, they're not just going with the kind of cliffhanger that was after the end of the credits. They're, you know, kind of continuing with the world and the fallout of the stuff that happened, as opposed to what looked like might be the setup for like Horizon Zero Dawn 2. So yeah, I'm excited to see it. I want them to make so much content for this game because the universe is so interesting. So I'm not going to gush about Horizon anymore because I could literally gush about it for the next like half an hour, but we're going to move on. The other game from Sony that's getting DLC is Uncharted. So this was teased a while back, actually. This is the kind of like buddy cop DLC, and I'm totally blanking on the names of the characters, so Ryan, you're gonna have to help me out here. But
Chloe and Nadia.
Okay, I thought it was Chloe, and then I was like, no, you just have Life is Strange stuck in your head, Jocelyn. That's the wrong name. So no, it is Chloe. Okay.
Yeah, it is. So Chloe was a character that was introduced in 2, showed up in 3, but then was not present in 4. Nadia was introduced in 4. So supposedly those two got together for a job at some point in the Uncharted franchise, and we are seeing that story. There was talk after the conference that this was the reason Last of Us 2 wasn't shown, is that Uncharted Lost Legacy is actually coming out, I think, soon. Like this
I think
summer.
It's 2017. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me look it up. Uncharted.
Yeah, I think it's this summer, and that was sort of the reason why they didn't show The Last of Us 2, and there was already news that
August 22nd.
Yeah, so very soon. And The Last of Us 2's trailer that was premiered at the PlayStation Experience in December was actually what they were going to show at E3 as an announcement. So I think the plan was always either to show it here or show it in last December, and they decided to jump the gun there. And I know I was disappointed, and I know Garrett and Katie, who joined us for the stream, were disappointed that there was nothing new from The Last of Us 2. So we know it's a game, we know it's coming out, but it was not shown at the Sony press conference. But, I mean, Uncharted looks good. They make great games, Naughty Dog, and this is no different. So I'm looking forward to jumping back into that big, beautiful adventure game. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I think it looks really cool, too, and I'm looking forward to getting back into just the Uncharted universe in general. My first, like, start to finish Uncharted playthrough was actually Uncharted 4, because I mentioned on the stream, I think I was really late coming to the Sony party. I got a PS4. That was my first PlayStation ever. So I hadn't played through the earlier Uncharted's. I was an Xbox girl for a very long time, just because of the price for consoles and games and everything else, right? Like up until this generation of consoles, I basically got one each cycle. So, anyways, I hadn't played any Uncharted. Uncharted 4 was my first start to finish playthrough, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm looking forward to going back to that universe. So we talked a little bit earlier about just how there seem to be a lot of zombie games that have come out in the last few years. Seems like maybe they're kind of ticking down in terms of frequency of release now. But one that we are getting that actually looks a little bit intriguing, even though it's zombies, is Days Gone. So we saw this one teased last year, and we got more information about it, including some gameplay this year. And it seems like it's a little bit different than previous entries into the kind of zombie, not franchise, zombie theme is not the right word either. Genre. There it is. Wow, that took me a really long time to get to. But the difference with Days Gone is it very much seems like the zombies provide a very real, will probably overrun you and kill you threat because they are very much a horde. So they are fast moving. There's a lot of them. You know, if you get their attention, then you're probably going to die. So it kind of turns it more into a bit of like a stealth game and a puzzle game because you can use that horde of zombies to, you know, like decimate your enemies and get into new locations and things like that. So I feel like Days Gone might be something a little bit different, so I'm a little bit intrigued, but you are the resident zombie fan on the show, so Ryan, are you excited for Days
Gone? Of the two of us, one has a zombie podcast. I've said this before on this show, and I've said it many times on Zombies Ate My Podcast. I'm a fan of the zombie genre, but only when it's good zombie content. And we talked about this on the stream with Garrett and Katie. I said, there's really only been like two great zombie games. And then we struggled to name two. Like Last of Us comes to mind immediately.
Obviously.
And, you know, I think there can be a discussion around, you know, the original Walking Dead from Telltale, maybe State of Decay, maybe Dead Rising. But all those games have like a certain level of jankiness, right? There's issues with those games, but Last of Us was this truly great zombie game. And I know I'm probably forgetting about one. I may be a zombie fan, but I'm not as, you know, in tune. If Lou were here, he would probably be screaming from the rooftops. But Days Gone looks like a great zombie game that is using what is not done so well in games, which is horde tech, swarming. And that's the scary part about zombies. Not one of them taking you out because you happen to be not looking a certain way, but having a multitude of zombies surround you and just, you know, tear you a new one, literally. And that's not something we've seen in a lot of games. Like Dead Rising's tried that, but it's goofy. Like if you get caught by one zombie, you don't die. You just kind of like brush them off and swing your giant hammer and everyone goes down. In Days Gone, it feels like if you truly do not manage the horde or don't get to a safe spot in a timely manner, you're going down. And that's actually very appealing
to me. It seems like it might be really actually punishing as a mechanic. Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, it could be punishing to your enemies as you use the horde. They showed this in the demo that you use the horde to take out your enemies and kind of guide them in a way. And that's really exciting. And something that was explored in The Last of Us DLC, where for the first time, you were up against humans and zombies at the same time, and you could throw a brick at an enemy, make them shout, "Oh, crap, where'd that brick come from?" And then the zombies come and eat them, you know? And it's exciting to see great zombie content, and this appears to be one of those games. Although no date given, which is a little frustrating because it was one of the games I was really looking forward to from Sony, and it just there was no date given, which is usually a sign that they are just not sure when it's coming out. So probably late 2018, I would say.
Yeah, which, I mean, again, I have to applaud Bethesda for this because we know when their stuff is coming out. It's awesome. Like, I'm really excited about that. Just knowing that things are coming as opposed to, yeah, they'll be done, ready when they're ready, 2018, 2019, we don't really know, but keep the hype up until then, okay?
Like if we have to see Days Gone again at E3, you know, are we going to be as excited when they announce that it's going to come out in 2019? Like, I don't know. And I think I'm kind of glad they didn't show Last of Us. Because we're not getting that game for quite a while. They are still deep in development. And another game they showed was quickly God of War, which again was another, hey, remember this from last year? A huge announcement last year. That game at least has gotten a semi-release date of early 2018. So it's on the horizon, but no real date given, just a time frame. But still looks fantastic. But Yeah.
We also got a time frame for something that I'm really excited about, Detroit Become Human. And this game looks really cool. It has a lot of branching decision trees, and you can kind of make your main character and make your story the way that you want to. And it's essentially the, I guess, cyborgs or AIs or robots or whatever are rising up and kind of showing humanity that they are their own people, even if they are synthetic. So I really like that idea. I like the branching decision tree where your decisions really actually impact your story. And the things that you can do in the story are based on decisions that you made earlier on and your overarching character. It's very much like the Paragon type system in Mass Effect 3, like that unlocked different story options or not narration option, dialogue options.
Right.
If you had a certain rating in your Paragon system. So I enjoyed that kind of a game. I'm looking forward to this. Not to mention Jesse Williams is a total dreamboat and he's the main character. So
whoever that is. I mean, we had that conversation on the stream.
We had that conversation on the stream, yep.
Look, yeah, I don't know. If we're talking like late seasons, is this a late seasons Grey's Anatomy thing or...
Well, the last half of the show, probably. So I think he shows up in season 6 or 7, something like that.
That's I don't know if you can call that like prime time Grey's Anatomy. Like maybe first three seasons before they killed off all the characters. I don't know. I only watched it because I grew up in the country and we had two channels and there was nothing else on. So it was like, it was either this or TVO.
Sure you did, Ryan.
All right, fine.
Just admit you like Grey's Anatomy and we can move on.
Again, first three seasons. You know, McDreamy, and then he kind of just fell off. I don't know what happened there, but I don't know. I don't know anything about this show.
So Detroit Beyond, or Become Human, not Beyond Human, Become Human got the basically 2017 release date. No actual specific release date, so I feel like that might mean that it's potentially on the bubble to be pushed into like spring 2018, but it looks really cool and I'm looking forward to it. So whenever it comes out, then I'm on board with that one.
Yeah.
Shadow of the Colossus was something else that they revealed at the Sony press conference and is a, did they actually say if it's a remake or?
They did clarify it is a remake. Okay. And you know, I made the joke that The Last Guardian didn't do so hot, so they're going to try for the actual game everybody wants from that, you know, stable of games from the Ico developers. So Shadow of the Colossus, I don't know who's making it, but it was kind of like, this looks a lot like Shadow of the Colossus, but I do not remember a PS2 game looking this good up-resed. And the fact that it's a complete remaster is exciting because a lot of folks
say... Well, it's a remake, right? It's not a remaster.
Sorry, yeah, remake.
And yeah, remake, okay.
I'm part of the problem. the fact that it is a complete remake is nice because this game is well-regarded. You know, a lot of people loved it, and I just did not get a chance to play it, and I think this is the perfect opportunity to just wait a little bit longer and get this remake, which has been, I think, slotted for, again, 2018. Which, I don't know, Sony seems to think that it's... Like, Sony seemed to be the only person that was kind of okay with showing a lot of 2018. Thinking back, I can't really think of what was just 2017. I think it was just the DLC, unless I'm mistaken. But what is Sony doing?
Well, like I said, I think the Detroit Become Human is 2017.
And I mean, David Cage games are notorious for being delayed, so I even question that. I mean, but you're right. Like, if it's billed for 2017, then that's one game. Like, you look at Microsoft, you look at Ubisoft, Nintendo, EA. What does Sony have for you know, really great holiday hits only on their console? There's not a lot, you know?
No, there is a lot of cross-platform stuff outside of the DLC. You're totally right. Even Spider-Man, which we saw a lot of gameplay for and looks really cool. And a lot of people have been saying, you know, like, Spider-Man Arkham Knight, like, because it was very reminiscent of Batman gameplay, which I think is good because I love Batman gameplay, so I'm on board. But even Spider-Man, that a lot of people, it looks really cool, a lot of people are really excited, everyone's saying like, yes, take my money, I'm buying it. That's another 2018 title.
Yeah, early 2018 again is what they're saying, but
but still 2018, you know, like their holiday offerings are not I was gonna say not that great, but not even a thing. Like, I don't know. Yeah, existent. They're completely non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at what Sony has to offer, and I am having this issue right now where I'm, you know, there's a lot of deals on in Canada here. You kind of have to snap up those deals, pre-order, you know, so you can lock in a decent price for video games. And you're looking at all the cross-platform games that are available on both the PS4 and the Xbox One. And you look at that and you say, like, okay, these games will probably play the same across both consoles. Where do I get them? Like, what console do I get them on if I own both? And I think this year has been a really good example of there being very few games to purchase on a specific console. Sony had Horizon, and that's about it. It all comes to mind. You know, there hasn't really been that solid console exclusive. But then you look at what Nintendo's doing, which is just all console exclusives, and really gives you a reason, I think, personally, to pick up a dedicated console from a publisher. I think you can look at the other platforms and say, well, I only really need one of these, and if I'm comfortable with PC, I could probably just get a PC, because a lot of the games that are across the other platforms are on PC as well. The argument can probably be made to say, like, well, if I was going to buy a console, it should probably be the PS4, because then I can hit their exclusives. Microsoft has all their exclusives on PC as well. So you can kind of hit that sweet spot, right, where you don't really need to worry about console exclusives unless you're into Nintendo games, in which you have to purchase their console.
Yeah, I'm looking at a list here on Metacritic of upcoming releases, and they've got everything from E3 that's been given a date. And I mean, there isn't really anything that is 100% Sony exclusive. Like, there's lots of stuff from the other publishers. Like, we've got Assassin's Creed, South Park, Middle Earth, like Evil Within, Star Wars, Need for Speed, Call of Duty. Like, they've got all the big titles covered, but I don't see anything here except for, I guess, maybe Steep. But even that, Steep is a...
It's an Ubisoft one.
It is an Ubisoft one, and I think it's available on Xbox One as well. So, and that's just an expansion. If you guys are wondering what Steep is, it's the skiing and snowboarding game, and they've got an Olympic expansion to it, because the Olympics are coming up in 2018, so that's available in December. But I think, like, I'm just looking, and everything is, like, also available on PC or Xbox, so they don't really have anything exclusive.
No,
at least this year.
Yeah, and, you know, 2018 is a big one. I mean, for Sony, let's not forget, like, God of War, or 2018 will be big. God of War, Spider-Man, maybe Days Gone, again, if they attach a date to that thing. Maybe Detroit if it gets delayed. There are games, I'm not trying to say that, you know, you shouldn't buy a PS4 or an Xbox One. I think you should really buy whatever tickles your fancy, right? If you're into PlayStation games and you like that console and you like that ecosystem, go nuts. I say the same thing about PC, Xbox, Nintendo, whatever. But you just have to really, it comes down to the games, because all these boxes, especially Microsoft's and Sony's, are very similar. And I think you have to make a call as to, do I want both? Do I want one? Do I just want to buy a PC? They're all starting to come together and have very similar games, especially if you're an Xbox fan, because everything they announced.
Well, everything they announced was on both, yeah. So we might as well get right into it then with the Nintendo titles, because these are exclusive to Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're into that, if you're into Nintendo games, you're probably thinking, Ryan, yeah, good points. You guys are making really good points. If you're not into Nintendo games, you're probably like, I don't want to spend $400 on something I'm only going to play one game on.
Yeah, and I think Swex in the chat room, when we very first started the show, was saying something about kicking himself for buying a Switch because he's not into basically anything that's coming out. But there is, they do have quite a big catalog. They had a lot of announcements. Granted, some things were very much like, these are in development. For instance, they did confirm that they are working on a full new Pokemon title for the Switch, which is good. They also confirmed Sun and Moon, or I guess Ultra Sun and Moon, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Coming to the 3DS, that's, I think, 2017, holiday 2017, right?
Yeah, that's this year.
So, I mean, yay, Pokemon. after Pokemon Go and kind of the success of that and my involvement in that, and I mean, I'm still playing Pokemon Go like a year later, I am actually really excited about a Pokemon game on the Switch. It's been a really long time since I've been like gung-ho about something, and I really want to get the Pokemon experience. So I'm excited that that's coming. I might even pick up the 3DS if I can find my 3DS, wherever that may be. Yeah, if I could find it, it's probably in one of my travel bags somewhere. But if I could find my 3DS, then yeah, Sun and Moon is something that I would probably go ahead and pick up. They also talked about more information about, well, I guess the only information that we had was a leaked image. And we made fun of it a couple weeks ago with Peach taking a selfie. It is the Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle. And we were very much like, okay, WTF is this going to be? Like, this is going to be dumb. But we were both very pleasantly surprised by what we saw in the gameplay demo. It was not what we were thinking it was going to be at all. We thought it was going to be some sort of, like, arena or possibly, like, a
like a mini game collection.
A mini game, thank you. I was going to say party game, but yeah, mini game collection. Like, something kind of throwaway and silly. But it actually is basically XCOM, but with Mario and Rabbids.
Which is like a dream. Like, you have this dream about two games combining into one. It's like, that'll never happen. There's no way Nintendo's going to greenlight a Nintendo XCOM game. And Ubisoft has created this title. And I know a lot of folks, it's like the Minions. It's kind of an acquired taste. You either like them or you don't. And personally, I can take or leave with the Minions, but the Rabbids, for some reason, I don't mind them. They're fine. And I find the sense of humor they're trying to portray with those characters mixes really well with the Mushroom Kingdom, and I think the trailer showed it off really well. And it looks like a lot of fun, and I was worried, yes, it was going to be a party game, but the fact that it's a XCOM style slash platformer coming out in August, by the way, very nice. I cannot wait to see more of this game and check it out in August, because it actually looks really good too. Like, the graphics that they're displaying and they're pushing out of the Switch actually looks really solid. I was really impressed with the way Ubisoft was able to portray the Mushroom Kingdom. Yeah,
I was really impressed with just some of the gameplay mechanics, because I haven't played too much of XCOM, but I watched Matt play some. It's not my kind of game. I don't think Mario and Rabbids is going to be my kind of game. But that being said, some of the gameplay mechanics, including movement, you can like use your teammate to like boost your movement. You can, even if your teammate is at the edge of your movement for that turn, if you get there, they like pick you up and throw you so you can, you know, get a boost in movement. Then there was also a mechanic where like you had a bomb sort of thing that went off, and then your enemies start to burn, and then so they run around away from you. And it just seemed to have a lot of these kind of extra physics and extra movements and extra tactics that make it a little bit more interesting than just like move to cover, shoot bad guy, move to new cover, which, I mean, I know XCOM is more complicated than that, but at the same time, it kind of isn't. Like, it's very much like movement turn-based, you know, like you do your moves and then they do their moves. And this just looked like there was a little bit more to it. And I think that that makes this game really interesting.
Yeah, no, it's got a lot going for it. And Ubisoft is a very strong supporter of Nintendo platforms. And it's nice to see them coming out with what looks to be a strong contender for probably one of the best Switch games this year, you know, because it's one of the few Switch games that is actually going to be unique and new to the console, because we have, you know, we had Mario Kart, we had Zelda, we had we're gonna have Splatoon. Those are all games based in other worlds that we've already experienced, you know, ARMS being one of the first new IPs for the console, and I would consider probably Mario Cross Rabbids to be like the next new on Switch. So, and it's gonna sell well, because
were snipper clips. Don't forget snipper clips.
Snipper dips, yeah, snipper lips. That's really good. But I just think that combining Mario and Rabbids is kind of a perfect combination for, you know, a console like this. Like, you couldn't see this working on any other system with any other set of characters. it's surprising how well they blend, and it's surprising how Nintendo approved like a rabbit dressed as Peach kind of walking up to Mario as if she's smitten. It's really well done, and the humor in that game looks really fantastic.
Speaking of Peach being smitten with Mario, we saw a lot more of Super Mario Odyssey at E3. And so the basis of this game basically is Peach has been stolen by Bowser. Bowser's going to marry her. So you as Mario have to go break up their wedding. And you do this by progressing through a number of different open worlds, although they have very discrete boundaries. They're quite small, but they're still openly explorable worlds. And you have your trusty hat. I can't remember his name off the top of
Cappy.
My head. Cappy. Oh, Cappy. I knew it was something not stupid. Stupid's the wrong word. I knew it was something simple.
You had to stop yourself for a second there. I don't blame you. It's kind of simple.
Yes, it's very, very simple. But you basically, the mechanic in this Mario title is you throw your hat at things, and it allows you to become that thing. So we saw him throw, actually the one mechanic that they showed quite a lot was him throwing his hat at bullet bills. And then you have a kind of set amount of time before the bullet bill explodes where you can kind of ride him around. So you can, drive him into walls and explode the walls to open up new pathways. You can use him to traverse otherwise impassable chasms. So there were some really cool mechanics, and you could also take over like traffic cones, because obviously this is the Mario that actually has a level that looks very much, it's called New Donk City, but it's actually, it's basically just generic city, skyscrapers and cabs and real people, which again, seeing real people in a Mario game is kind of weird, but
you can actually become a real person too. Like you can possess a real person with Mario's, with Cappy. And the game, just every time I see it, it feels like half the game is out of place. In a weird way that kind of makes you shift in your seat, like what's happening to Mario? Like what are they doing to him? And then there are moments in that game where you're genuinely like, oh, okay, this is the Mario I remember. You know the platforming that I'm used to, the locales that I'm interested in, like the sand world that they talked about, which was basically looked like it was based off of like a Mexico style culture. And it looked fantastic, and it was new, but it still felt like it belonged in a Mario game. And
well, yeah, it's still, even though it is new, you still had the feeling that you could jump in and you would know how to progress in the game, right? Like it still felt very Mario. They were all the same kind of platforming puzzles to solve. And then there were other little things, like you would go and talk to an NPC and the NPC was like, you don't meet the dress code. Yeah. So then you would have to go find the shop and then buy the hat and then get into the club. And then you were rewarded with one of the, they don't give you stars anymore, they give you moons. But one of the main currencies of the game, you get rewarded for solving the puzzle. They also had a really cool way of integrating some like 2D graphics and 2D puzzles. So you kind of like go through a pipe into the wall and then you kind of stick flat to the wall and then you have to go around and platform your way through the puzzle. So it was very comfortable, very Mario-like, but at the same time, something new. So yeah. Mario Odyssey, again, that's a holiday 2017. So
October.
Looking forward to... Yes, well, yeah, that's true. They kind of expanded their holiday but to include October. I think it's late October, though, isn't it?
Yeah, like October 27th, which is...
I feel like it's the 27th, because I think the joke was made in the chat room during the conference that basically it's a Halloween title, and it kind of makes sense because Mario's dressing up as a whole bunch of different characters. You can even become a T-Rex, guys. You could take over a T-Rex. That's a thing.
Yeah, that's where it started. I was like, what the hell is the dinosaur doing here? Like, what game could this be? Is this brand new? It's like, no, they're literally allowing Mario to become a dinosaur. And this was something new that was not displayed in any of the trailers previous, was the fact that you could possess other units, enemies, inanimate objects, just really crazy stuff, and only the kind of stuff that you would see from Nintendo. It looks fantastic. I cannot wait to play this game.
The other thing, we got some news, air quotes, about was Metroid. So right. Has there been extra news, or is it still just the splash image that we saw of Metroid Prime 4?
Yeah, so you have Metroid Prime 4, which it has been announced to be in development for the Switch. New team, it's not Retro, the guys who, or the team that made Metroid Prime 1 through 3. So it's a new team, same producer, so the guy who's been behind Metroid since its inception is still there. I think it's its inception, maybe since Super Metroid. But anyways, that's coming in the near future, and there's talk that Metroid Prime 4 will probably be the Mario Odyssey or the Breath of the Wild game that Nintendo spotlights next year's E3. But they didn't include this in the main show, but right after the main show, or right after they talked about Super Mario Odyssey, they showed off a brand new 3DS title that's coming out in September, which is Metroid Samus Returns, which is a remake of the Game Boy sequel. One that probably a lot of folks hadn't played because it was kind of just kind of showed up. I mean, maybe a lot of people played it, but I don't really hear people talking about it as a fond Metroid experience. So the fact that they're remaking it is kind of interesting because I'm actually going to be able to play it now. I haven't really played the second one, so I'm excited about that, and it looks really good. I know a lot of folks are kind of disappointed it's not on the Switch, but I still think the 3DS has its legs. It's still worthy of new games. So I'm glad that they're, for some reason, like for years and years, they ignored the Metroid franchise. And then all of a sudden, we're going to get two games in the next couple of years, which is exciting. And I don't know. It looks.
I'm sure a lot of people. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people are going to be really happy about this. What I'm really happy about is the fact that they're still supporting the 3DS, even though the Switch technically can be a portable and you can take it with you and everything else. And, you know, they could have basically just said, OK, we're not developing for the 3DS anymore. If you want a portable Nintendo gaming experience with all the new games, then get the Switch. And I know that, like, not all the 3DS titles are available on Switch and not all the Switch titles are available on 3DS. But the fact that they're not just flat out dropping the platform, the fact that they're still developing for it makes me really happy because there are a lot of people that don't own a Switch but still like the portable Nintendo titles. So I'm glad that they're continuing on both paths instead of just saying, okay, no, we're done with 3DS, everybody go buy a Switch. I think that's good on Nintendo for that.
Yeah, I can see them supporting the 3DS probably into 2018 and probably showing, you know, a lack of concern with the platform at next year's E3. I think next year's E3 will be solely Switch. But the 3DS, again, still has legs, and most of the titles we saw at this year's E3 are releasing in 2017 for the 3DS. So there's still a couple more titles for you folks, including myself. Yep.
And finally, from Nintendo, we got many, many amiibos announced. So we got a Wedding Bowser, a Wedding Mario, and a Wedding Peach for Super Mario Odyssey, which I've got to say, I love Wedding Peach's outfit. I'm totally getting Wedding Bowser, but I liked Wedding Peach's outfit, except, man, her face. What's wrong with her face? She looks like shocked or like she can't choose between Mario and Bowser or something. I don't know. But she's basically just standing there like.
She's kind of like, she kind of does look a little like.
It's a really weird pose. It's really weird.
Like, all you had to do was have her like put her hands together and kind of be like, you know, give her the whole like sideways smile type thing. But you know, she's always surprised, like, oh no, I'm being kidnapped again. You know, like, that's always her expression. And the fact that there's a lot of jokes out there, like the fact that, you know, she appears to be confused as to who to choose. You could totally skip buying the Peach amiibo and just make it look like Mario is marrying Bowser.
Yes, yeah, you totally can. Because, yeah, they showed her. I just put a link in the chat room. They showed her standing between the two. But, I mean, you really could just take her out of the equation completely and just have Mario with Bowser.
Yeah, but, you know, in terms of, like, them all suited up in these outfits, these amiibo look really good. And Nintendo's just getting they're getting really good at just developing these high-quality amiibo that live up to the expectations of Nintendo collectibles. But yeah, I will probably buy those three. They did actually announce also that they would be putting out a Goomba and a Koopa Troopa in the series, which I think I'm at the point with amiibo where I'm only collecting the ones that I actually want to put on a shelf. Like I have some really weird amiibo that I probably will leave wrapped up and, you know, will not see the light of day. But mainly because I have way too many of them. But those three are very unique and look really cool.
So have you seen, I just put another link in the chat room, have you seen the Metroid ones?
Yes.
So they're, and I don't know, like, I don't know Metroid. I don't know enough about the things to know what this is. But there's like this see-through brainy thing with big teeth that's broken out of this canister of some kind. And it looks really freaking cool and not Nintendo-y at all.
So that is a Metroid, which is the, you know, the bad guys in the game are, you know, animals that people seem to misunderstand and use okay. for evil purposes. But that's the Metroid. And that actually, that clear thing is actually squishy. So when you kind of touch
really?
It. Yeah, it's kind of like cool. Like a, you know, it just feels like a squishy texture and kind of like an alien creature, which is what it is. And then the Samus one again is Samus in her typical, you know, I'm ready to shoot your face off pose.
Yeah.
So that's really nice. And yeah, these are going to be featured as a dual pack out in September, and they just look really cool. Again, like just showing off how far they've come with making these amiibo. And yeah, like it just, it looks cool. And I love the way they solve the fact that the Metroids usually float. They pin it up against like a broken container to mm-hmm. to shy away from the fact that all the other amiibo of that style have to have the like this clear plastic support beam.
Yes, which I think we should talk about the clear plastic support beam, because sure. there is one coming out in holiday 2017 that looks just like it's the worst possible placement for that support beam. And that is the Urbosa. There's basically coming with the next set of Zelda DLC mm-hmm. In holiday 2017. They're releasing four amiibos, one of each of the four champions. And Urbosa has like her back to the camera. She's mm-hmm. wearing a skirt. The skirt's all floaty out. She's got her legs spread and this clear plastic support beam going right up between her legs.
Well, did no one
it's
think
freaking hilarious? Like, exactly, this is right up there with the original Link one that had the yellow thing that looked like he was taking a piss.
Yeah. This one just, yeah, I don't know,
this is so bad.
It's really bad. And I looked at it on screen, it's like, does no one else see that? Like, that looks
yeah
kind of bad. And you know, I saw these amiibo, and I have probably a good majority of the Breath of the Wild amiibos. I loved Breath of the Wild. But the champions never really, you know, struck a chord with me enough to actually want to go out and pick them up. Like, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the Zora design. Mm-hmm.
I don't love Mipha's amiibo. I think that they could have done something a little bit more interesting with her pose, although mm-hmm. I'm glad that she doesn't have a clear stick up her, you know. But, I think that they didn't do as much as they could have with her amiibo. I do like, even though he's my least favorite champion, I do really like the Revali amiibo. Oh, yeah. I think he looks really cool.
I like Revali as well, and he was my favorite.
He's the bird person.
Yeah. Bird guy.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, bird guy looks good. Revali looks good. I felt like the Goron would be nice to have. A Goron.
Yeah, Derek.
Amiibo.
Yeah.
And I was just gonna
to be fair, he also has a clear plastic support beam right up his, you know, but it's a lot less noticeable than hers just because he's so big anyway that the support beam is quite short and it takes up most of what's between his legs, so it doesn't look as bad. But Urbosa looks just terrible.
Urbosa looks bad, and they all kind of have support beams when you look at them.
Even they do, Revolver. Yeah.
But I think
just even Mipha has a support beam too. It's just kind of behind her,
yeah.
Which is interesting because things like Wedding Bowser, who is just as big as Derek, the Goron, Wedding Bowser doesn't actually have a support beam at all.
Yeah, I wonder what that. Maybe it's because it's they all have weapons and they're all like proportioned weirdly, and maybe the balance is off and they felt like they needed to kind of extra secure it. But yeah, I really like the look of the Goron. Revali looks good. Weird stick up my butt. Not a big fan. But Mipha or Mipha's, you know, looks okay. She's not bad. And I don't know, it just wasn't one of my favorite characters, and Revali was kind of a dick, but I don't know. a dick.
He totally was a dick, but his amiibo looks really cool.
Yeah, kind of looks like a badass Falco, you know?
Yeah.
But no, more amiibos. I think they announced a total of like 13, I did final count. And they actually, you know, just out of nowhere.
Yeah, there's two from Fire Emblem as well, right?
Exactly, yeah. Like Crom makes sense because Crom is a big character from Awakening, but Tiki kind of comes out of nowhere for me. Like I don't know where they got that one from, but they're going to launch those alongside of Fire Emblem Warriors, which is coming out in the fall. So Crom is a good one, well-deserved. He hasn't been done yet, so those are two brand new amiibo of characters that have not been done yet. So that's well-deserved.
And I don't think that they actually announced what they're going to do in their various games, but at this point, I don't even care. They look super cool.
amiibos are, if you're looking at amiibos, they are first as collectibles and cool Nintendo toys that you can put on your shelves and look at and say, oh, that's really cool. And then secondary, you take them off the shelf and they do something cool in your game. And I think the cool thing in your game is basically reserved to, I got a random item that will help me in my gameplay. That's what Hyrule Warriors did with amiibos. That's what Breath of the Wild did with amiibos. So I don't see them ever locking a bunch of content. And they actually announced for Odyssey that it will basically unlock costumes and unlock special rewards that you can scan in. So it's not anything world-breaking. It's just an added extra feature that you can...
Mostly cosmetic, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And speaking of one, it's not in the notes, but one last little cosmetic thing that they announced when they announced that Skyrim was coming to Nintendo is you can also play as Link in Skyrim now. So the face looks really janky, but you have the Master Sword and Link's whole costume. So if that's a thing that you want to do, that's a thing that you're going to be able to do.
I saw a funny article that was posted before we started the show. It was top three Skyrims at E3 2017. And I thought about it. I'm like, oh, shit. There was like three Skyrims at E3. You had the Switch. Yeah. You had the PSVR. And I'm sure there was, or I guess maybe.
There was Skyrim that was the expansion for the Elder Scrolls card game.
Exactly. So top three Skyrims. I wonder what the ranking was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
Pretty crazy.
It's crazy that game is still a huge thing.
So yes.
Again, it's a great game, but.
Yeah. Like 6 years later, we're still getting new ports of it and new things for it. So, and yeah, something else we didn't get a chance to mention, but Creation Club again had to do with Skyrim as well. So, lots and lots and lots of Skyrim at E3. But that pretty much does it for our wrap up of E3. Ryan, do you want to take our patron ad this week?
Yeah. So, our patron ad comes from Simon. Weekly News Desk is a podcast all about the geek news this week. Join your two Knucklehead hosts, Andrew and Simon, as they keep you informed on movies, TV, video games, and books. Find them on iTunes or at weeklynews.com. I'm sure both of our patron ad subscribers, both Weekly News Desk and The Geek Review, we'll be doing a lot of E3 coverage as well. So if you want more of that, those are
you're not sick stuff. Of hearing about E3. Yes, go and check both of them out for sure.
Exactly.
I think that's going to do it for us this week. You can find us on the web at gamersandpodcast.com. You can also find us on Amove TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, For Azeroth, and Embrace the Spoilers. And if you guys like hearing Garrett and I talk about stuff, including Game of Thrones Season 7, please do go to bit.ly/embracethespoilers to support our Kickstarter. We're about halfway to our goal with about 20 days left. We are very, very excited to bring the next season of Embrace the Spoilers to you guys, but we can't do it without your help. So please do go check out that Kickstarter, help support the show. We have some really cool stretch goals, which include some summer movie reviews, as well as doing commentary tracks for Indiana Jones, which I have never seen. So make me watch them, make me do your commentary, and have a good laugh at my expense. Again, that is bit.ly/embracethespoilers, and you can find that along with all the other shows over on amove.tv. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on youtube.com/amovetv. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you're most excited about for E3, please do so at info@gamersandpodcast.com. You can also join the conversation over on our Discord, which is bit.ly/TGI Discord. Make sure you guys go and check it out. Thanks for staying at Gamers Inn. Remember, tune in next week. Bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.